So everybody around the office today, everybody on TV, certainly going to be talking about North Korea. But they're leaving out some really big stuff. They'll be talking about, you know, what did Donald Trump say yesterday and how is he threatening them? And, you know, Kim Jong-il, they'll say this all the time. Kim Jong-un is, he's crazy. No, I don't think he is. Maybe evil, but not crazy. And the people in North Korea are not evil. They just have absolutely no idea what's really going on in the world. This is a closed society. The compassion that we have to have for the people of North Korea who are completely misguided. How could anyone think they could win against the United States? It's probably not that hard to believe once you understand what they've been taught and what they believe even about their own leaders. We're going to go inside of North Korea, introduce you to the people and what they really believe is going on in the world. We do that beginning right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Michael Malice is a guy who went behind the Iron Curtain. It's a very closed country. And he left there and he wrote a book called Dear Reader, the unauthorized biography of Kim Jong-il. Michael, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's a great honor, Glenn.
Thank you. So, first of all, tell me what got you to go to North Korea? I mean, you stalking Dennis Rodman or?
Well, here's the thing, and something you kind of touched upon. It was bothering me a lot how so much of the press about North Korea is complete misinformation. And I said, I'm going to do something about this once and for all. Now, I was born in the Soviet Union. I'm Jewish. These were two chances for my family to have been sent to a concentration camp. And there's concentration camps in North Korea right now. You know, people ask, how did we let the Holocaust happen? They have the camps right now. You can see the camps on Google Earth. And yet so many of these news reports want to look at North Korea and be like, aren't these people all silly? It's like, yeah, these are 25 million hostages. If the government had a gun to your head, and the heads of your children, you'd be doing pretty silly things too. So that's why I wrote my book, Dear Reader, so that people can understand exactly what's going on there, because it's not at all how it's portrayed in the press.
So I would like to get into the concentration camps with you, because people don't understand that it's not your sentence. It's they sentence you and your family for three generations. I mean, it's evil and crazy what is happening there. Most people in the West can't even begin to understand it. But can we go back and try to explain and tell us some stories that you saw firsthand on how the North Koreans are so isolated that they have really no concept of what's really going on in the world, and they think that they can beat the United States.
Well, they're not completely isolated, because the barriers, thankfully, have been breaking down a little. However, to your question, this did not happen overnight.
Yeah.
This was a 70-year methodical process by this gangster family. And step by step, they built up barriers to separate North Korea from the rest of the world. Things like anyone who spoke other languages or who studied abroad were sent to the concentration camps. Things like books in other languages being destroyed and no longer being allowed to be taught. Let me give you an example of the mechanisms that they use to control their population. And again, it's things we can't even wrap our heads around here. Everyone in North Korea is slotted into some group, your school, your office, your neighborhood. And once a week, that group gets together and you have to stand up in front of your peers and say, this is what I did wrong this week. And then your peers have to stand up and say what they noticed you doing wrong. So everyone is watching each other all the time and reporting on each other all the time. So a lot of times people are like, well, why don't they just get together and overthrow the government? If you have two people conspiring, they're done. And as you said, the founder of North Korea, the great leader Kim Il-sung, said class enemies must be exterminated to three generations. So they take three generations of the family, and even Stalin at least had trials. There's no trials. You get a knock at the door in the middle of the night, the family gets taken, and you don't even know which one of you got you sent to the camps or to the countryside. They don't tell you. It's just come with me.
Let's go back. Can we go back to the Korean War and how they're viewing America? We had the Korean War, and it became a TV show called MASH, and that's it. For them, they have been preparing for this time since the 1950s.
Right. So according to one of their books and according to their worldview, we are, by the way, you can't refer to us as Americans. We are always referred to by a slur like the U.S. imperialists. And it's just how the language is taught there. So automatically when they're talking about us, they're using offensive terminology. There's a book in North Korea called The U.S. Imperialists Started the Korean War. They are taught that we started the Korean War, that we've been waiting to conquer Korea since the 1860s when USS General Sherman went to Pyongyang. That part is true. We did visit them back in the 1860s. And now we've been biding our time to come back and finish the job that we started. Now, many of your listeners are veterans. The Korean War was completely devastating to the Korean Peninsula. You had China, Russia, and North Korea at the north, South Korea, U.S., and the U.N. in the south. And between the two, the devastation was complete. So their whole point is, you remember how bad it was in the 50s. Well, any day now, the Americans are going to come back and finish that job. And but for the leader, you would all be dead.
And when you say but for the leader, what's remarkable is the calendar has been reset. It's the year what?
So the calendar starts, again, they're not going to have a Christian calendar because having a Bible is the death penalty, right? So you're not going to have BC and AD. So their calendar starts with the birth of the great leader Kim Il-sung in 1912. So that's year one.
Okay, so... And he was, I remember one of the Kim family was brought down, you know, by angels or birds, and crazy kind of stuff that he remembers the day of his birth. Do they believe this?
There is a lot. It's very funny because they claim to be an atheist country, but there's all sorts of supernaturalism that revolves around the Kim family. They have, so Kim Il-sung, the great leader, the founder of North Korea, he had missionaries in his family, and he adopted a lot of Christian mythology and applied it to his life and the life of his son and his wife. So they have a holy trinity, which is the great leader Kim Il-sung, who's the founder of North Korea, and Kim Jong-un's uncle. We have Kim Jong-il, who is the dear leader. He's their Jesus figure. And Kim Jong-il's mother, who's always referred to as anti-Japanese heroine, Kim Jong-suk. They always picture her with a gun in her hand. So this is the holy trinity that keeps Korea safe. And they have Mount Paektu at the north, which is basically like their Mount Zion, which is the spirit of Korea and basically the embodiment of the Korean energy. So they have a lot of mystical stories about this family. And basically, like Kim, but for Kim Il-sung, you know, who is almost a messiah figure, Korea would still be under the boot of Japan.
So when the UN passed these really tough sanctions, I'm for the sanctions. I don't know what else to do. Going in with military is just... is almost a, and maybe an act of insanity.
Right.
But, you know, when you see the sanctions, the people have no idea that their leaders are the ones that are starving them and choking them to death. And this will only be blamed on us, and it will only make their lives worse. How do you break that in that culture? How is it even possible to get people to understand, no, it's your leader is evil?
Well, it started happening on a micro level. You remember towards the end of the Cold War, despite decades of communist propaganda, what happened is Russian people were watching American soap operas on television, and they were thinking to themselves, it's all well and good what I'm taught in school, but why does the maid on this television show have a fur coat, and I'm literally wiping my butt with newspaper? You know, I don't care about Marx, whatever. I just want food for my kids.
Right.
And in North Korea, the same thing is happening. They are seeing that all these other countries are wealthier than them. It doesn't matter what you teach me in school. I want my kids to have food. It's as simple as that. So one of the things that has happened is they've changed their propaganda from we are wealthy and the world envies us. And now the propaganda says we are keeping Korea pure. So it is also the most homogenous and most racist country on earth. This is something that's not talked about in the press, that they believe that Korea is the only country that has been racially pure since Neolithic times. And they regard the South as a region under U.S. occupation where we basically assault Southern Korean women, Americans do, and do with them as we please, us we being barbarians. So that's another aspect of their propaganda.
So looking at what you know about North Korea and hearing the president yesterday,
yes,
how was that interpreted by Kim Jong-un and the people around him?
I would honestly say it's going to be interpreted with a bit of respect, and here's why.
Oh, good.
They are bullies, right? So let me, when they talk about we know how to treat America, in their words, they say, when necessary, we'll slap her across the face. And, you know, I remember last year, a year and a half ago, there was this photo released of Kim Jong-un in front of his Apple computer, and there were nukes striking Austin. And the things that they get away with saying are just completely outrageous. So Trump was basically using their language against them. So on some level, they're going to have a bit of respect for it. Just like anyone who runs his mouth, at a certain point, you have to get in his face. Now, I'm not saying you have to get in his face and actually shove him. But on some level, they're like, okay, this is going to be a difference in tone, at least, from previous administrations.
So where is he? Where does he go from here? I mean, he has killed, you know, everybody in his family that could have challenged him. He's done it openly. He's killed everybody around him that could challenge him.
He's only killed one person. And actually, so let's talk about how evil this family is. Kim Jong-un's aunt, Kim Hyung-wi, Kim Jong-il's sister, that was her husband who was killed. And she is such an evil woman that when her daughter married someone who was below their social station, she drove her daughter to suicide.
Wow.
Didn't he have both his uncle and his brother killed in the
airport?
The guy in the airport, right? Which one was that?
Wasn't
that his brother?
Right, yeah. And then
supposedly he had his uncle torn apart by dogs.
Yeah, I thought he had somebody else killed by standing them in front of a cannon and blowing a hole through.
are these urban legends, yeah, or did that actually happen?
Is that the
happen?
Way he is, Michael?
No,
we've lost Michael. Okay, so get him back on the phone. Let me take a quick break.
Fascinating. I guess we'll never know.
Having somebody, I can't wait to also talk to him about his experience in the former Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Anyway, really he'll be back in just a second. Talking to Michael Malice. He is a guy who went over to North Korea, wrote a book called Dear Reader, and saw behind the curtain, if you will. He's also a former citizen of the Soviet Union, so he has seen it from both sides. We were just talking to you, Michael, and we lost our connection about, you know, we have heard that he killed his brother and his uncle.
Right.
And then a lot of the people around him who could have challenged him, he has taken out and done horrible things to. True or false?
That's, That's okay. So the last part is false because there's no one around him who could have challenged him, because the point is, it's only a descendant of the great leader Kim Il-sung who could be in the leadership position. So the people at the very top there, it's not like they were voted in. They're only at the very top specifically because of their loyalty to the regime. In fact, unless you're loyal to the regime, you're not allowed to even step foot in Pyongyang. You are geographically assigned where to live in North Korea based on how loyal you and your family have been to the regime. So that's number one. So he killed his elder half-brother, who they only met once, I believe, because, again, only a descendant of Kim Il-sung can be the leader. So if your brother is killed, there's no plan B for you for if Kim Jong-un's taken out. There's not a Mike Pence sitting in the wings. And lastly, one of the things that I was fighting about, when writing Dear Reader, is the sensationalism. We tend to believe the craziest possible stories about North Korea. And South Korean media reported that his uncle, technically his aunt's husband, was eaten by dogs. That's not true. He was shot. But he was killed, and with her agreement.
So then, you know, we keep hearing that he feels backed into a corner. Right. Who is he backed in a corner by if there's nobody to take his place?
Well, there's increasing pressure from America. There's increasing pressure from China. And what would happen is when you remember possibly Romania, when Ceausescu, the evil dictator of Romania for decades, when he was there was a moment, and it's a very beautiful moment for everyone who loves freedom, when this horrible dictator was on TV, and for the first time the crowd starts booing, and you see the look on his face, and two or three days later, him and his wife were shot. Kim Jong-il took that video and showed it to all the leading party cadres and said, if the masses rise up, this is what is going to happen to us. So when these regimes go down, the people at the very top, like Gaddafi, like Hussein, are personally killed, and with good reason. So that's another very important incentive for Kim Jong-un to do anything he can to stay in power. It's not like if he's removed from power, he's going to, you know, retire to Saint-Tropez. I mean, this man is a monster.
So I've only got about 30 seconds here. So perhaps I ask it and then we come back on the other side, because I really want to know also about, you know, the former Soviet Union and your life there.
Yeah.
But I guess what I would like to know, and I don't know if you could answer this, so is he likely to just kind of be quiet and allow himself to be put into a box? Is he the type that will fire off a missile because he's a god?
He's the type who's taught and believes you fight fire with twice as much fire and escalate whenever possible, especially when you're the small dog.
Okay, so what that means exactly when we come back. You can find Michael at michaelmalice.com.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Michael Malice, he is an author and commentator. He's an expert on North Korea, traveled to that very closed country, wrote a book called Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il. You just said to me, Michael, that that Kim Jong-un is a guy who believes if you're hit, you hit back twice as hard, you don't back down. And as you're describing the traits of Kim Jong-un, you're also describing our president.
To some extent. You remember during the campaign, Trump did apologize for that audio that got out, and I don't think President Trump would be comfortable starving 10% of the population.
Oh, no, I don't mean it that way. No. I don't mean it that, I do not mean to equate the two of them. I mean, just far as tactics.
I
last night I thought the press was press was crazy last night.
Yeah,
they were almost saying, you know, we got to have war because Mr. President. I mean, now you're not going to have any credibility. You can't back down. It was crazy.
Glenn, it was terrifying that they're basically saying, oh, they're first of all, the idea if North Korea is going to attack us, that they're going to go after Guam, is insane on its face. They're going to have one shot. They're going to make it count, to be totally, you know, Machiavellian about it. But let's get some perspective. For decades, we had hundreds, if not thousands, of nuclear weapons from the Soviet Union pointed at us and our allies. And that was something that we managed to deal with. So this situation is not entirely without precedent.
Okay, so that so is...
But everyone should take a deep breath, you know?
So my position today has been pretty much that. Take a deep breath. There is no good answer to this. The thing to do is walk away, keep your eye and ear to the ground, but just walk. There's no good answer to this. Is that enough for Kim Jong-un?
Well, it's scary to me how so many people are saying that because Kim Jong-un is treating our country and our president with disrespect, that I saw one commentator say we should rain hellfire on North Korea. I mean, these are 25 million. You want to talk about having the moral high ground, being the moral leader of the free world, and you're going to be killing 25 million slaves and hostages? What kind of person are you that, not only that, what kind of person are you that's your first reaction as opposed to a last resort? It's terrifying.
No, I was watching last night. I'm so glad to hear you say this, Michael. I was watching this last night. I was watching CNN, and they kept going on and on and on about, you know, how the president said all these things, and now there's a red line. And commentator after commentator yesterday was saying, you know, we don't have a choice. We can't be embarrassed. We can't, you know, be the laughingstock. And I'm thinking, we're talking about the possibility of millions dead. Who cares about your stupid honor if all it means is, you know what? I said something I shouldn't have said. I'm going to shut my mouth now. And what do you say? We leave those millions alive.
Glenn, I'm going to make it even worse. The people in these concentration camps are told constantly and explicitly, there's like 100,000, 200,000 people, should the U.S. imperialists invade, we will kill you all and burn these camps to the ground. So like you're saying, if someone has a gun to my kid's head, if someone has a bomb, they're going to blow up a school, they can call me every name in the book. Please call me all the names you want. Just don't kill the children. And the idea that, like, well, we better go in and kill the children first as a response is even more demented.
How is North Korea, if the United States would respond, I can't imagine that South Korea, because it would be almost like our American Civil War, is going to sit happily by as a Seoul is most likely destroyed. And secondly, they have family members up there. It would be viewed as the United States killing their family members, would it not?
To some extent, those families have been separated now for 70 years with no communication with each other. But let's talk something else. You know, people are saying they have nukes now. This is unprecedented. They've had missiles pointing at Seoul for decades.
Yeah.
Seoul is a city with you know, tens of millions of people with skyscrapers. Can you imagine the imagery of missiles hitting a city full of skyscrapers, even if they didn't have nukes? Is that something people are comfortable with? Or it's just, well, at least it wasn't nukes that are hitting these skyscrapers. I mean, is that what we're talking about? And that is what we're talking about. So it's a very dangerous situation. And Glenn, I know you remember very well the war mania that led up to the Iraq war and how everyone's like, we got to do something. We got to do something now. Emergency, emergency, emergency. Let's freak out. Let's do things as quickly as possible. And it's like what I was taught growing up in school is that war is a last resort. It's not the first thing you do, and it's not your best option, especially when you're dealing with a regime that is comfortable killing its own citizens to maintain its hold on power.
Talking to Michael Malice, KimJongIlBook.com is the site. Michael, is there an increase in their resources lately? I mean, they've been able to outpace all of our intelligence estimates as to what they've been able to develop.
Like crazy.
They're dumping money into things like renovating the Hotel of Doom, which, you know, is only the Hotel of Doom because they didn't have money at one point.
It's the Hotel of Doom. So let's talk about how North Korea uses their army. North Korea, everyone in the army does construction. So they're not just sitting around or whatever. They actually build things. So that hotel, which is, I think, at one point the largest building in the Eastern Hemisphere, something crazy, the Rongyang Hotel, was structurally unsound. So it was never completed because it can't be completed. It's a complete mess. And it just looms like this giant hulk over Pyongyang. But let me also talk about, you were talking about having empathy for the North Korean people. When I went there and we were taking the bus from the airport to the capital city, my guide pointed at that hotel and she goes, look, there's our latest rocket launch. And, you know, we don't think of them as human beings. They have sense of humor. They have families. You know, when you're on the street, you see the grandmothers doting with their grandkids. You see teenage girls giggling when you wave at them. The fact that these people are capable of having some semblance of humanity in the most inhumane country on earth behooves us, when you read news reports and trying to make them out to be clowns, keep in mind, again, like I said earlier,
they're not clowns.
If someone has your family as a hostage, you're going to put on clown makeup too.
Yeah, and it's not the people are, when Semi says, you know, these people are clowns, they're meaning, you know, I think people like Kim Jong-un, et cetera, et cetera. He's not a clown. He is.
No.
He knows what he's doing. He just operates with a completely different operating system than we do.
And the whole point of my book is spelling out how they operate and what they're doing, because it's very logical. It's very methodical. But let me speak a bit about the clown issue. Like, I remember there was an article in a British paper that showed the marching, and it's referred to Kim Jong-un's mini-skirted robot army, that these young women, you know, in the army are all marching in lockstep and ha-ha-ha. It's like, you know, they're hostages. Of course they're going to march like they're told. They're not robots. To call someone a robot is to act like they don't have a soul or a mind of their own. And they very much do.
Okay, well, let me ask you, first of all, can we have you back? We're running out of time. Can we have you back on tomorrow?
Of course. It's an honor.
Okay, I would love to. Go ahead.
We'll figure it out. We can figure it out, yes.
Yeah, okay. Let me ask you two other questions. First of all, Otto Warmbier, the kid that went over...
Right.
Was, you know, caught stealing a propaganda poster.
Right.
Was, you know, 15 years. What'd you say?
Trespassing.
Yes. 15 years to hard labor. Looks like they pretty much tortured him to death and dumped on our body, I thought, in a way that was very reminiscent of The Godfather, sending us a message. Here's your citizen back.
No. That's not it at all. They had him as a hostage. If you have a hostage, you want to return the hostage in one piece so you get your ransom. So when things turned south, they knew they couldn't take care of him, and that's why they dropped him off here. Think about it.
Okay.
He didn't serve a day of hard labor. They treat their hostages very, very well because they're a valuable resource.
Well,
remember when they kidnapped that Ling reporter? They got President Clinton to fly to Pyongyang and kiss Kim Jong-il's ring. That's a great coup.
Right, but this guy, it looks like he was drugged and tortured. That's
my understanding is that the autopsy showed no signs of trauma, and this could have been self-harm.
Huh. Okay, I had not heard that one. One last question.
Sure.
Is there something that we could be doing right now other than sitting on our hands and just hoping for the best now, is there something that we should be doing or we should be encouraging some other country to be doing?
Yeah, we should be sitting down with China and saying, what is it going to take for you to turn on these people once and for all? And frankly, Glenn, if they have
did we lose them again?
A food.
Go ahead.
And they don't have concentration camps, I'm fine with it.
You're saying if China would just roll in and they were still communist, but they were fed and no concentration camps.
Right. Communist in the Chinese model. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can live with that. They don't need to have some Western liberal democracy. As long as they don't have to live in constant fear that their children are going to be murdered, that's all I need.
How old were you when you left the former Soviet Union?
2 years old.
And your parents... came over here with you when?
78.
So they escaped and knew what they were escaping.
Oh, yes. Oh, of course. And it wasn't anywhere near as bad towards the end as it had been, you know, when they were growing up. And it's certainly nowhere near as bad as North Korea.
So do you watch the TV show The Americans?
I couldn't because they have them being patriotic Russians, and that wasn't a thing. By the 80s, everyone was cynical and knew that the system was nonsense.
All right. So I'd love to have you on maybe again tomorrow, and because I'd like to talk to you about what it's like to live in a communist country.
Absolutely.
You know what you know, and then and how we've kind of blown it here on our side, and when maybe perhaps you have some insight on Putin as well.
I'll just tell you one sentence: we fought the KGB, and now we have the NSA. No, I'm not joking. Yeah, I'm not joking. What's the difference?
Mm-hmm. Mike, good to have you on. Michael Malice, michaelmalice.com, michaelmalice.com. You can grab the book, Dear Reader, The Unauthorized Biography of Kim Jong-il. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow a little bit about, you know, what it's like to live in a communist country and what your family saw and how that relates to today. Thank you so much, Michael. We'll talk to you
again. Thank you so much, Glenn.
You bet. Hello, America. I thought he was fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, an incredible life he's lived. And you know, it's one of those things. I remember I was very jokey about North Korea for a long time. It does seem silly. There's so much ridiculousness there. And I remember it was Michael Malice's book and also Jonah Goldberg column I read at one point. And, you know, this is really like Hitler in our time going on.
Oh, I know. And like, we don't pay attention.
And we just don't treat it that way at all. And we just kind of treat it as this sort of silly thing that's going on in this other part of the world. And it really is serious.
Yeah, there's a couple of things happening in the world. And I will share some pretty big news about the Nazarene Fund. I got word that one of our operations went well, which the operations that we're involved in now with the Nazarene Fund are absolutely hair-raising. I will hopefully have all the information cleared to be able to share with you tomorrow. But what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening in North Korea, those are probably the two biggest stories that, you know, we'd like to say on our high horse, oh, you know, our founders should have done something about slavery. Oh, I would have done something about that. I would have, really? Oh, the world should have reacted, you know, with Hitler and the concentration camps. Where was the rest of the world? I would react different. Really? Because it's happening. It's happening right now. And we're going through the same thing that every society goes through. What do you do? What do you do? And the average person is not the one making those big sweeping differences. It is the governments that do it. And that's why we took on the Nazarene Fund. You can't wait for the government. I don't know what you do with concentration camps in North Korea. Holy cow. Can we get that guy who escaped? Do you think we could find him? Guy who escaped the concentration camp in North Korea and came out and smuggled information out. He is fascinating because what they're doing in these concentration camps, America doesn't know. And I don't think the world really cares. And we should. It's not a drumbeat to war, but it's at least something that you need to be aware of. A special on North Korea and its leadership tonight at 5, only on the Blaze TV.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.